This is Bike Tourist Podcast show number 6. My name is Gabriel and welcome to everybody, especially if you're new to this podcast. It has been almost a month without posting a show, so I ask for a little forgiveness on your part. A couple of reasons stand out. There has been a lot of stuff coming my way lately that I had to deal with, so my time to do a quality podcast was very limited, and my mood was not the best, and knowing it would reflect on the show, I decided it was in the best interest of the audience that I wait until the smoke cleared. I was breathing a little easier and relaxed, because it would mean that my mood will also be better, and you will benefit in the end. The other reason is that the show is doing really great, even better than I expected, and I'm going over my monthly bandwidth. It's not that I'm complaining, on the contrary, thank you. We are now ranking number 2 on the Sports and Recreation Division on Podomatic, and if you help spread the word, we could become number 1. But all this comes to a cost, and bandwidth is costing me a lot. So I need to upgrade my site to accommodate a new whole bunch of listeners. When that happens, I will need a little of your help to defray the cost of producing this podcast. There will be a donations icon on the page, so you can go and donate a buck or two if you want. I can mention you on the show so the world knows you are giving a little hand. The upgrade will also give us more possibilities to add features to the webpage, so you can come and have a good time. Remember, the URL is www.biketourist.podomatic.com. www.biketourist.podomatic.com. Remember to vote for the show on the podcast alley link on the right hand of the webpage. And we have an announcement. We have a winner to one of the CDs that we're giving away on the last show. His name is Aaron Popke from Goleta, California. He called the podcast phone 206-339-4425 and said the code phrase number 1. We still have one more CD to give out, so make sure you check music show number 1 and get the second phrase. If you live overseas and calling the phone is too expensive, you can register with Podomatic and leave audio messages directly on the webpage. It's a free registration, and who knows, you might be the next podcaster here in Podomatic. If you would like to set up your own show, drop me a line and I'll help you out. So, now let's go down to business.
Bike Tourist Podcast.
Okay, so here we are at part 2 of the Bike Tourist Podcast interview with Spinning Southward Crew. We have here John Longsdon, Mike Longsdon, and Nate Aiello. Okay, guys, welcome to the show again and to share. Okay, say hello to everybody.
Nice to be back.
Good to be back, Gabriel. Yeah.
Hey,
hello, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the first one.
It's
bound to get more interesting.
Yeah, for all the audience that is new to this podcast, we had the first part of this interview last week, and we are doing this thanks to the magic of Skype. Since we have Mike, which is in Bolivia, John is in New York, and Nathan is in California. So, and I'm in Puerto Rico, you know, the small islands, Puerto Rico in the Caribbean. So this is a really great effort for everyone taking the time to be here and share with you the adventures of the Spinning South Tour. Okay.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah. Okay, say hello to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Let's start with John here.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say hey to everyone, and you know, really glad to be here again. Please give us your feedback and let us know what you think about the trip. If you have any questions, we're very eager to field any and all questions.
Mike?
Thanks for having us here. This is a great opportunity. And I just want to say to everyone out there, please stay tuned. We've had a lot of encounters with bears and bandits and all sorts of adventures and misadventures. And, I hope you enjoy this as much as we are. So.
Okay, Nate?
Yep. Hello, everybody. It's good to be back. Can't wait to see what we get into on the show.
Okay, so last time we were talking about food and clothing. Okay, now I'm sure most of our listeners come from the States, but we have listeners as far as UK, and we have from many parts of the world. Some of them are not talking, but I know they are there. You know, I have some map that I know where they are coming from. But most of them don't do commentaries on the show. I want them to remember that Bike Tourist Podcast is open to everyone, you know, open to everyone, cyclist, or if you are not a cyclist and want to do comments on the show, you are welcome, you know. This is your house. This is your home here. Okay, so right now we're going to talk about the south of the border, you know. Most people, you know, who read trip journals on different websites, normally I feature many people here from crazyguyonabike.com, and, you know, but there are plenty of places. Remember, this guy has a wonderful website, which is www.spinningsouthward.com, where you can go and check the adventure. And we want to concentrate today in adventures when you get to the border. We say, okay, we are leaving United States, you know. We came from Alaska, obviously you have to cross to Canada, then to the States. But then the panorama changes, you know. We are going to change to a completely different culture and completely different food places and stuff. So we are going to start in there. So I want some starting comments of how you guys feel when you were going to cross the border. I'm going to start here with John first, then Mike, yeah, and then Nate.
Well, fortunately, through our past travels, we'd had some experience in Mexico, fishing and the food and culture. Our parents had actually sent us down when we were in high school to spend some time, really get immersed in the country and do some language courses. So we had some grounding in what to expect, but Tijuana, crossing into Tijuana, anyone who has been to Tijuana can tell you that is a, it's a intense experience. So I think we, you know, in general, we greeted that change with a lot of excitement, some kind of wariness, about what we might encounter in terms of maybe some danger or what have you. And a lot of it was just the unknown, you know, not knowing what we would find there. Because of our limited experience, we'd only spent, you know, just some time primarily in Baja, California. So it was a lot of new experiences, and I think we were, you know, just kind of went into it wondering what it was going to be like. So I'll turn it over to Mike. I'm sure he's got some of his own thoughts on that experience. Yeah.
You know, there was so much. You know, I mean, we had some limited experience in Mexico, and when we were younger, but I think there was a little apprehension on two points. One, first, I was concerned about how people would react to us crossing the border into Mexico, and then subsequently Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, you know, those countries, all the way down to Argentina. You know, I wasn't sure how we'd be accepted, perceived, and so that was something that I was a little unsure of about. But you know, and likewise, I you know, so many people, mostly I have to say, people who hadn't traveled south of the border, said, you know, this is incredibly dangerous. You should reconsider what you're doing. And so, you know, between those two things, I think there was some definite nervousness on my part. But I have to say, pretty much as soon as we crossed the border, those feelings were alleviated. From Mexico, from Baja to all the way down, you know, through all of Latin America, there was a real sense of openness, a real kind of open arms policy towards us coming through on bicycles. you know, people really, really went out of their way, I feel, to try and help us out in any way they could. And you know, here we are. You know, the trip has finished 16,000 miles. We're all alive and well. So, you know, we're living proof that that maybe those concerns are misplaced. I'll turn it over to Nate.
Okay. Yeah. I flew into Baja to meet the guys down in Los Buriles. And my only experience in Mexico before this trip had been on a trip with my family. We went on a cruise. And that went through Puerto Vallarta, Mazatlan, and Cabo San Lucas. And it was, I mean, honestly, I thought it was pretty lame. It was just like all the tourist towns and stuff like that. I didn't really feel like I got an experience of real Mexico. So going on this trip, I was kind of worried. And the biggest thing I was worried about was the things that I brought along, which is like my laptop and my camera and like some very expensive digital equipment. After listening to what people's stories about having things stolen in Mexico and Central and South America, I was almost positive that my stuff was going to get stolen, you know, somewhere along the line, or I was going to, you know, someone's going to see me filming and then see me camping and, you know, something bad was going to happen. But, you know, like Mike said, it was completely the opposite, at least in our experience. Nobody, you know, there was no threats, nothing really ever went down with the camera or my equipment. And the real thing I had to worry about was my stuff breaking, which I found out eventually. But
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if one thing that, you know, in addition to our work in with the National Brain Tumor Foundation and supporting them, you know, in addition to that, I think the one other thing that we'd like to bring to people's attention is to try and dispel some of the misinformation that we get in America through, you know, kind of rumor and you know, just miseducation and or lack of education about these places, is that, you know, we were treated with incredible generosity. And I think all it took for us was a willingness to open up to the people that we met on the road, respect for the culture and a willingness to at least attempt to speak the language. And, you know, people took us in, they fed us, you know, in some cases people with very little for themselves. And you know, it was just a real, really restored your faith in humanity. And furthermore, I'd say that, you know, a lot of those experiences we wouldn't have had if we were on a bus traveling through at 60 miles an hour. You just don't get those personal interactions with locals like we did.
Yeah, that's true, man. That's really important what he just said. Like, I feel the same way.
Yeah, I remember when I was a teen, I used to be on the CBL Air Patrol. We have this sergeant from the National Guard who was our commander in the Civil Air Patrol squadron, and he'd been to Vietnam, and he'd been to a lot of countries, and he told us one thing. He said, when you go to a place that is not your home, you know, you go to Panama or to other country, you know, in order to be accepted, you have to accept people. You know, this thing works two way. You know, if you go to a deep jungle and you go to a tribe and they have some typical cuisine in there that you look and you say, oh my god, you have they want to share with you, and you have to be with them. Once you do that, you know, everything is okay. And not many people understand this. They go to places and they just act like they were in Mars or Jupiter, and you know, this is the kind of response they're going
to
get, right?
True. Yeah, it's really just a little bit of respect and an openness and a willingness to try, you know, to accept the different cultures goes so far in kind of enriching your experience. And again, you know, I'd reinforce that you know, those, whether or not you're open to those experiences, you're just not going to have them if you're not doing, I mean, you may, but, you know, it's a lot easier to have those experiences if you're on a bike. We were just approached all the time. People wanted to know what we were doing. you know, we just had a lot more interaction than the conventional means of transportation via, you know, plane, trains, and automobiles.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned that you had this small filter for for filtering water when you got. Okay, I saw your video on when you started Manzanillo, and the movie South. I saw that there was a streak of bad luck in there, especially for Jun, and it started with a stomach problem. Can you elaborate on this? Because you know, I saw the information on there, but I want some thoughts on that after all this had happened, and what you can advise other tourists when they go to these regions and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know what we did. When we got south of the border, what we quickly learned is, you know, you have to be careful with the water. That is true, and you really want to ask, you know, locals that you trust as to what the state of the drinking water supply is, because there were certainly a lot of places in Central and South America where we did drink the water, and you know, it just depended. But you know, if you're playing it safe. What we found is the best means is the garrafones, which are the large, you know, plastic containers of water that are reusable.
Similar to what most people use on water coolers and whatnot. Is
yeah,
pretty much
exactly.
That setup.
Those are going to cost you, you know, in most cases $1. And you're going to get all the water you need, which is a lot. I mean, you know, when you're a lot of, you know, Central and Mexico and Central America, you're drinking, I don't know, 6 liters a day, maybe more.
Probably more, probably about 10 with cooking.
Yeah,
per person.
Right. So that's a great way to get all the water you need for cheap. You know, you can spend so much money getting those little bottles of water and, you know, 1 liter bottles and 3 liter bottles, and you're creating so much waste in terms of the plastic, and certainly from looking, you know, that's one of the heartbreaking things of going through places like Mexico and Central America in particular, is, you know, the amount of trash that accumulates on the roadsides and that kind of thing. And you know, we're not there to judge, but you know, whatever we could do to lessen that burden, we wanted
minimize
to
minimize our impact.
That was,
yeah,
having those reusable waters that we, you know, the containers that we could get what we needed from them, and then hand them off to the people, and they could be reused. So, but in getting back to your initial question, you know, with the sickness, you should have Cipro. Or some kind of fairly powerful antibiotic, which is going to help you through what's at least on this scale of a bike tour, and in Latin America, almost an inevitability. You know, you're going to get sick once or twice, and it's not the end of the world. You just have to be prepared to deal with that. Maybe some, you know, electrolyte fluids. We have the Clif Bar. You know, recovery drinks and electrolyte drinks. Some of that, if it's a mild case of traveler's sickness, but when, you know, when it's reoccurring for several days and in a way that's really debilitating you, you need to have some antibiotics on hand that can get you through those.
I would add to that saying, you know, it's just, you know, as athletes, you know, as you know, and if you're a bike tourist, you know, you are an athlete, and you know, it's important to know your body, you know, and judge the situation. You know, some things will be minor, and you know, you can just see them through without treatment. Obviously, you don't want to treat every single you know, stomach
right.
issue or whatnot, but knowing your body and knowing when, you know, if things are getting getting, you know, to a point where it's, you know, it's getting pretty serious, you know, being able to pull the trigger and say, okay, you know, maybe now I do need to go get some, you know, professional medical care. And, you know, just because that was something that was difficult for me that Nate helped me out with. You know, I'm trying to hold on to this kind of John Wayne-esque attitude, like, you know, I can just wait it out and, you know, I can handle the discomfort. But, you know, at one point it turned out, you know, I was trying to do that with dysentery and I didn't know. And thankfully I had Nate to help
yeah,
remind
usually,
me, hey.
Usually when you're curled up on the ground in fetal position and you can't get up, that's a good sign that.
Yeah, exactly. That's when you should go to the doctor.
But yeah, you do experience when you're going through a new country, you know, with the new food, there's, you know, some new bacteria for your body to get used to, that kind of thing. You are going to experience a little bit of traveler's, you know, trouble, as we'll say. And that's just, you know, that's part and parcel of traveling in general. So I don't, you know, the one thing I would caution, as Mike said, don't freak out if you have a little bit of stomach trouble. It's only when that starts to dehydrate you and really take its toll on you that you need to start thinking about the antibiotics.
Yeah, one thing that was advised to me by one of the PhDs that works my workplace. I work for Universidad Central del Caribe in Puerto Rico at the research department. He's from Argentina. He told me that. In Argentina, I don't know if at the time he was youth, he's over 60 now. There was obligatory military service. They told them to carry activated charcoal tablets, which are common in most countries outside United States and Europe. You know, in Europe and Latin America, right. Activated charcoal is on the pharmacopoeia of the of those countries, but in the United States, it's not. Until a couple of years ago, it was not available anywhere. Maybe you can go to a health food and to get it, but now you can get it almost all drugstores. You can get activated charcoal. The thing that he explained is that when you're going to drink from some questionable water source, you just pop in two tablets of this. What happened is that activated charcoal is like a magnet to bacteria. So when you drink that water, if there is any bacteria, the bacteria will stick to the charcoal. And then when you go to the service, right. You go to the service, you are going to expel all this bacteria out of your body without affecting you the most part. And he said that it really works.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of choices out there. I would say in general, you know, don't put yourself in a position where you're drinking from a water source that's really sketchy. There's, you know, we thought, you know, when we started this trip, again, there's so many things that you don't know about and you wonder about. We were using the water filter primarily in, you know, Alaska and Canada and parts of the northern west, the northwest, where we had, you know, fairly clean stream and river sources that visually looked okay, and there weren't heavy population. Once you get into heavy, dense population centers, you don't even want to, you know, try and filter the water, because even if you get everything that you can in terms of disease and bacteria, you're still going to have really nasty tasting water. So in those cases, it's better just pony up the dollar and get a big jug of water. So that's my two cents on that.
Yeah, Mike?
No, I mean, I totally agree. You know, it's the water filter is an important thing, I think, to have with you for the entire trip. But you know, if you have the ability to get a hold of water, and in most cases you will, save a few spots, you know, you should go with the safest option, because you know, I've made the mistake of taking on you know, questionable water, and I paid the price with dysentery, and perhaps I had another issue with a parasite, and And I can tell you from my experience, it's not worth saving that extra dollar, or
not really.
I mean, it can put you down for a week or more, perhaps.
Yeah, one thing I saw. I'm switching to a totally different topic now. I just remember that starting sequence on Manzanillo. When I saw this starring on the video, I saw some strange names you put in there, like Juan Dos Colores and Salvador de Perros and stuff like that. It really, what was this? I just scratched my head trying to figure out. The Salvador de Perros was actually self-explanatory. can you elaborate on this? It was quite funny.
Well, maybe you can't see very well. You know, it's because it's, you know, podcast or whatever. But if you look very closely at John, he has quite a vicious tan line. To this day, his arms are basically like a cherry wood dark brown, and his body is like a sunlight bright blinding white.
Yeah.
So that's how we got that name.
And since John is Juan in Spanish,
yeah.
Juan Dos Colores, that makes sense now.
That was our Spanish name.
Yeah, we got some interesting looks when we go to the beach because, you know, I mean, Gabriel, we were wearing, you know, the same, you know, I mean, we had a couple pairs of shorts, but, you know, the same shirt, riding a jersey every day. And,
yeah, I noticed
you know, that's... Yeah, that generates, you know, a pretty consistent tan line, and when we go to the beach, we got some pretty funny looks and some good laughs. So.
And what about the Hebrew nickname?
that's probably the band. What you got to do is you got to watch episode 4, and there's a interesting gentleman in there by the name of Angelo, who told me, well, you see, John and Mike are pretty easy to translate, right?
Uh-huh.
It's pretty obvious that it's Juan and Miguel.
Juan y Miguel.
Uh-huh. But my name is Nate. Like, my short name is Nate. My full name is Natan. And, you know, most people don't know what the Spanish version of that is. Most of them can't even pronounce my name. So we met this guy named Angelo, and he basically said that the Spanish name for Nate is Nati, or Natividad, which is, you know, Christmas as well,
yeah,
which is funny because I'm Jewish. So,
okay.
So, you know, the Hebrew, it's like the Jewish Christmas, basically. So, I don't know. We thought I got a kick out of it calling
yeah.
myself Nativi Dad, even though I found out as you get down into South America, it's more common as a girl's name than it is in
yeah,
Mexico.
But,
so,
yeah.
anybody named Nate out there who is going through Central South America, you remember that.
Actually,
if you're in a bar or something.
Yeah, actually, the name is used for girls, but also used for men, you know. It all depends, you know. I had an uncle, he's in heaven now, that his name was Mercedes, you know, Mercedes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a woman's name, but,
yeah.
but so we call him Cedo. so the thing was that, you know, the people say, oh, Mercedes, oh, look, the guy, okay, it's okay. So I don't say Natividad, yeah, Natividad, it's a girl, oh, no, it's a guy, okay, it's okay.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, generally it was okay, but, you know, there's those few times that people, you know, would kind of snicker at me when I say what my name was.
Okay, I'm now going to move into a different topic now. Okay, once you got, let's talk about Mike now. I was really touched. Yeah, I was really touched when I saw that Mike is basically an animal lover, you know.
Yeah.
I myself have 4 dogs, you know.
Hey,
I have
yeah.
4 dogs. And it was some, you know, this moment on video, you know, that you even said that you even considered naming the whole video stuff like Sunsets and
Puppy
Puppies. So talk us about, you work with animals and stuff. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, I mean, I think it, you know, came, I mean, I've always been, you know, very, very fond of animals, and, you know, I've got a great love for them. But, you know, and, you know, in the process of, you know, going to college and moving so much, you know, after college, going to find different jobs, you know, it just didn't really make any sense for me to have, an animal, you know, a dog, a cat, whatever it would be. So I kind of took it upon myself to adopt the street dogs and various animals that I would encounter for the time that I was there. In that particular episode on spinningsouthward.com, we came across a puppy tied to a bridge on a highway with a piece of wire, and we rode past, and then I looked at the thing, and it was just this little dirty poor little thing just sitting on the side of the road, and I was pretty certain that if he sat there for a while he was going to get hit. So I called Nate and John to a stop and said, look, what can we do? And we talked it over, and we all decided, well, this dog's going to have a better chance at living if we at least untie it and release it into the mango field, which was right next door. So we all agreed and said, okay. And so I, took the wire off, brought this little white puppy down to the field, and I put him there, and I said, okay, well, go back up the hill to my bike. And in the process of walking, I heard this dog making some noise, and he was running after me trying to catch up, but he kept on falling down because the grass was too thick for him. And so I kind of stopped, and it was kind of a heartbreaking I'm a bit of a softie, and it was a kind of a heartbreaking moment. So I looked at John and Nate, and and John's like, hey, what can we do? It's we can't really have a dog on the trip, and I'm like, you're right, and Nate agrees with the logic of John, and also feels the desire to try and do something with this dog. So finally we just said, whatever, and I grabbed the dog by the scruff of the neck, picked him up, put him in my backpack, and said, I'll figure something else out, down the line. And that's what we did, and thankfully we found him a good home on a small island with no cars, and an old woman who ran a restaurant who was very excited to have a new dog. So
yeah, it was great. You mentioned this island, and I was curious. This island was in the way, I know you reach at some point, you were guided by the locals, and then you get to a part of the river that you have to cross. Mm-hmm. And some great gentleman cross you on the boat.
Comes out to tell, yeah.
So after that, you got to the island, or you got to the other side and then got to the island. How was that?
It was wonderful. I mean, we got in, it was pitch black. We'd been tired from riding all day in 100 degree heat, and we get in, and this woman, I believe her name was Maria Luisa, about 85, 90 maybe, said, come, don't worry about, it was pretty late at night, and she said, no problem, you don't worry about waking me up, and put your stuff wherever you like, and I have hammocks, I have everything, and don't worry about anything. If you need drinks or some food, I'll be happy to take care of you, and you can stay with me as long as you want. Just maybe buy a meal from me in the morning, and that's what we did. I don't know if the other guys can have some more to add to that. It was a wonderful experience.
Okay. Nate?
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of like, it was one of those chance experiences that you talk to the locals and they give you a really cool place to go, and we went there and we met a couple of other German tourists who were at the end of their trip, and it was really interesting. It was a really cool experience. Watch the episode on spinningsouthward.com if you want to find out more.
Yeah, the chapter in Manzanillo is the last one out. When is the other one coming out?
Well, actually, So I was just gonna say, if you want to see the episodes previous to that, you can go on the website and look through the menu, and there's the documentary section which has episodes zero through the current episode. But Nate, you can obviously expound on what's to come.
Yeah, well, I'm working on episode 7 right now, and it's just kind of as I have time at the moment. I'm getting pretty close. Hopefully, another week or two, and it'll be out there.
Is Manzanillo the last one before episode 7?
I think so. It starts in Manzanillo. It's episode 6.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
It was starting in Manzanillo. I think it ends up in Acapulco, right?
Right.
Yep. That's correct. That's correct.
In paradise, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll see just how much paradise it was.
It
was great.
Okay, tell us about it. You know, just like a preview. Don't tell too much.
Okay.
To keep
just
the
preview, huh?
Yeah, like a preview. Then we jump to another topic.
It was really a great thing because we rolled into Acapulco. There was this guy that we met in La Paz, who you know was like, you can stay with me in Acapulco. La Paz, Baja, not Bolivia. You know, we didn't know if he was, you know, just joshing us or what the deal was. So we called him up. He gave us a great place to stay. And after we left Acapulco, we had one of the most incredible experiences on the trip with some indigenous people. After that, so that's all I'm gonna say.
It was a wild time in the jungles of southern Mexico.
Yep.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, to add to that, a quick little side note, which I think if you guys, if all of you out there go to spinningsoftware.com and check out the upcoming webs, the episodes that are up now and the upcoming one that will be posted not before too long, throughout this entire experience, all the way from Alaska, you know, to Argentina, everywhere we went, you know, we were always between, you know, big cities and small towns, and especially in Central America, we ran into a lot of places that they don't, you know, that the people who are living there didn't have, in some cases, no exposure to Americans at all. And it was a tremendous opportunity for us to be kind of ambassadors of our country, of, you know, if you can, our culture, if you'd like to say, and you know, if you're interested in you know, touring through Central America and some of these countries, you know, it's important to be aware of that. You know, like you have an incredible opportunity to make such a positive impact on the perception of your country. And it's a wonderful opportunity to do that and to share in the experience of other cultures.
Yeah, I can speak for myself. Before I went to the States, you know, I was born in New York, but I didn't have the time to grow up in there. I moved here to Puerto Rico when I was 3 months old. So basically all my life I've been in Puerto Rico. And then I just traveled there when I was an adult. You know, all these movies and stuff, the media stuff, you know, I was like, I'm from Puerto Rico, I go to the States, nobody will like me or whatever. You know, the experience was completely different. You know, mm-hmm. I started meeting people there, great people. They say, I won't watch TV anymore, you know.
Yeah.
Because most people have misunderstanding when the advice I give everyone, if you want to understand something, go there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the truth.
It is an important
question. Okay, guys, how was you, you know, now that you were mentioning Central America, in which way was it different from the experience in Mexico, well, for example?
John, you want to
John, let's start with John.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that was really the frontier. That was kind of where the world ended for us to that point in our lives. We'd never gone south of Mexico. At least I hadn't. Mike had spent a little bit of time in Costa Rica and Panama, which, you know, in comparison to places like Guatemala and Honduras is a world away. So there again was a place where, you know, that here was the adventure, you know, a new place and new cultures and new foods and all of the above. We found, our introduction to Central America being Guatemala was a little bit rough and tumble. We were quickly actually, kind of pulled to the side of the road by the police and told that it was just entirely.
Preface that, we had been advised by our own government's website not to trust the police in Bolivia. In Guatemala, that was what we had read on a particular website. Actually, I don't want to say it's particularly our government, but we were highly advised not to trust the police and not to trust anyone, to be extremely vigilant while traveling, because Guatemala was this this dangerous place and whatnot. And John, you can continue, shortly after crossing the border, we were stopped by the police, and those fears kind of immediately shot up. What is going to happen here?
So what happened when you were pulled out? So people can hear what was your experience, yeah. And how did you manage that?
Right. Well, do you want to go for that?
Sure. I mean, our initial reaction to that, or our initial fear, was that this was some kind of ploy to extort money from us in some way. But what the reality was, they had stopped us to let us know that they wanted to give us an escort through the country because of fears they had on our behalves that we might be assaulted on the road. And so there we were. It was, I don't know, being in an official race, or, being some kind of diplomats, we had an armed motorcade that kind of cleared the road for us.
And, guys with machine guns and shotguns, one car in front, one car back.
It definitely gave us, we definitely got more miles that day than most other days.
Yeah.
No one was, cutting us off. No truckers were driving us off the road. We were untouchable at that point. So it was kind of, although it was prompted because of fears on our behalf, it turned out to be kind of a great experience.
It was the people, who are these guys? I don't know. I won't ask.
We definitely got some looks. I assume people think, these are some official state people, or what kind of power they have to have an armed escort. But so that was
bike tourists. Bike tourists have that power.
Yeah, that's great. I just remember when I went to Venezuela in '91. I remember that, here in Puerto Rico, if you are lost and if you are looking for something, you ask a policeman. You see a policeman, and they will go out of their way to try to direct you to where you are going. Even if there is a language barrier, they will try to overcome that. So I was looking for a bakery. Was looking for a bakery. Here in Puerto Rico, bakeries are a combination that has bread and also have all the other things, cakes and sweet and candy and stuff. But in there, I just knew that, I just learned that it's different. If they sell bread, it's bread, and if they want to sell the other things, yeah. So I was looking for that bakery. I saw one, what I thought was a bakery. I saw some cakes and stuff. So I got in. So I saw I asked for bread. There's no bread here. Oh my, where I can get some bread? So I saw a couple soldiers in there, like three or four soldiers with machine guns under strap on. So I say, okay, this, ask the authority. So I asked for bread. Error, they surrounded me like I'm some kind of illegal alien and start asking, who are you, where you come from? So what I did, I just imagine myself behind bars,
So
at some moment of desperation, I look up to the street, and across the street, I saw some guy who got out with 1 pound of bread. I said, okay, I found what I'm looking for. I just walk out of them. And I continue walking, looking over my shoulder. They were looking at me. I just cross the street and I get into the store. And they just turn around and continue talking like nothing had happened. No way. It's like that. So okay, so continue.
Well, Mike, maybe you want to take it from there. It's
It's interesting. Like again, our perception did not fit reality because we'd expected these officers to ask first of all to try and somehow remove us of our cash or some of our stuff or something, and and literally they just wanted to help, and they wanted to make sure that we traveled safely through Guatemala. And the entire time that they did that, and we had an escort, I can't remember how long we spent cycling in Guatemala. Maybe one of the other guys remember. But through, it was many, many days. Over the course of, a week or so, they followed us the entire length of Guatemala. I mean, it was pretty exceptional and never asked for a thing. And, that was, again, in line with our experiences in Mexico and further down the line, people going out of their way to help us and not asking for anything. And when we tried to offer some kind of compensation for the help that people had given to us, they were often like, no, please, you're in my country, I want to help you. When I'm in your country, please extend me the same courtesy. And that's something that has stuck with me. From those experiences.
Yeah, and getting back to Central America specifically, there were parts of Central America that were, I think, it was like the Wild Wild West. It was really kind of bizarre, a little bit exciting, a little bit scary. We went into, for example, I believe it was in Honduras. We went into a bank. We're waiting in line, and people are coming in, and as the men are coming in, they're taking pistols out of their pants and putting it there. There's a place, designated there in the bank for people to put their guns when they come in. And, there were four armed guards in this little tiny bank, all behind bulletproof glass in different parts of the bank, little convenience stores would have guys with shotguns, and there were a lot of guns circulating, with just regular citizens, and there was some blurred lines between military and police, and definitely some things that we were not used to, and we were cautioned throughout portions of Central America not to camp, and we abided by those suggestions. Honduras and Guatemala.
The one time we didn't stick to that, we actually were shot at.
Well, that was in southern Mexico, but
yeah. Yeah. I mean, that wasn't Central America, but that was close to that. So. To all of you out there who are going to tour through Latin America, go with the local advice. That's the best way to go.
Yeah, definitely. There are other parts of Central America that, like say for instance Costa Rica, that can sometimes feel like America. So it's a mixed bag, and we had some of the most incredible adventures in terms of kind of outdoor, cycling through the jungles and rainforests of Costa Rica, and we cycled. In Nicaragua, we took a boat out to Isla de Ometep, where there's a volcano. It's in Lake Nicaragua, and had amazing adventures there. And it was a great place. I enjoyed it.
Gentlemen, I hate to interrupt, but unfortunately, down here in Bolivia, my ability to use this computer is being terminated for the evening, so I will have to catch up with you guys on the next segment, hopefully.
All right.
Okay. It's really been great that you be with us. It's so sad that you have to part Yeah, you know, maybe we can do something. Do you agree to next week to do another part of the interview with more time?
Definitely.
So we can, yeah, because yeah, without Mike, you know, without any of you, you know, this right. adventure wouldn't be complete. So let's let's call it quits now. And then we have enough material for two shows, and then a third show will be great because I can study all this, and then some question will come up, and we will continue. Yeah. We are just in Central America. We still need have
so much more to go.
Yeah, we still have.
Believe me, it's a long way.
Yeah, it's a long way. So, guys, great, great, great. Thank you for being here, taking time, and you know. For this, I'm sure the listeners will appreciate you being here and sharing the adventure. Remember, their website is spinningsouthward.com, www.spinningsouthward.com. And remember, ask your questions. Ask your questions. Remember the number, 206-339-4425. 206-339-4425. Ask your questions, and I will personally make them to the guys. I will play them to them. So, some closing comments before we go, starting with Mike.
As I said on the last segment one, the previous week, it's, you know, if anyone's out there who wants to do this, you know, it's possible. I mean, whether it's a trip of 16,000 miles or less, you know, you can do it. There are a million people out there who would love to help you. Nate, John, and I are some of those people. And also, I would just encourage people to, you know, if you have questions about a place, you know, you hear so many things, you know, don't spend time watching the news. You know, get out there, go see it, and you know, find out for yourself what it's really about. Because oftentimes, what you hear is the exact opposite. And you know, just get out there.
It's almost always the exact opposite.
Yeah. This is John here. I'd also like to thank you again, Gabriel, for bringing us on. And if people want to email you questions, Gabriel, what's the address that they would be directed to?
Okay, there are several ways. There are several ways. You can go to biketourist.podomatic.com. And there's a contact info on the right side of the page where there's my email. So you just click on there and leave me a message. And the other way, you can go to the comment line, which is the 206-339-4425, and leave an audio comment in there. Just say whatever you want to say, because this is open to all cyclists and non-cyclists too, because, you know, there are people who would love to be on a bicycle, but for health reasons or other reasons, they cannot, but they love the bike. It doesn't matter. They are welcome here. And they also, when the show is posted, you know, you can leave comments directly on the show. These comments will go to that. So I'm not going to take any more time. I don't want Mike to be cut off abruptly. Say goodbye to everybody. And this is Bike Tourist Podcast. Okay, say goodbye.
Bye. Thank you very much, everyone. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.